Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, November 15th. This is the women's Mishnah, or Chumash, Gemara Shir, rather. We're in Maseches Chulin, 8th Perek, doing the topics of Kashrut. Okay, Rabotai. We are going to see tonight a new topic. And as always, we'll start with the various Gemaras that are involved. And then, when we continue, we'll see what the halach is as we come across a couple of machloikas. This Gemara will deal with an unusual application of the laws of absorption. Up until now, we have determined and established that absorption of anything, meat versus milk, non-kosher, always requires the medium of heat. And that without heat, there is no such thing as absorption. Tonight, we're going to see two or three exceptions to that rule. That there are other media that will necessarily communicate some type of a taste into the utensil that you're using, and we'll see its practical applications. So this is Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet in Maseches Chulin, and the Gemara says as follows, as I bracketed three lines on the from the top. Amar Av Yehuda Amar Shmuel Ki'ara Shemalach Ba'basar Asur Le'echol Ba Roteach. Today, I don't think anybody here kashes their own meat. I don't think anybody does. In fact, I don't think you can purchase a piece of non-kosher meat, non-kashered meat, in a kosher butcher anymore. They assume that people today do not want to go through the bother of kashering it. And the assumption is that every piece of meat you have already kashered. What do I mean kasher? Simply to salt it in order to extract the excess blood from it. In Amule Gitzaten, we remember that you can go into the butcher, and the assumption was that the meat was not salted and kashered. And either you had to do it yourself, or you had to ask him to do it. Today, if you would want a piece of meat not salted, you'd have to go to the butcher in advance and tell him, don't salt it. And there are people who have to do this because they're on salt-free diets. And many of us can actually taste the residue salt from the kashering process. So, going back to Amule Gitzaten, when you or maybe your mother may have done something like this, so the pot, the ki'ara, the bowl, the pot, in which they kashered something, asur le'echol ba roteach. After you wash out the pot from the excess blood and everything else, you are not permitted to put any hot meat, any hot anything, into this bowl. Why? Because the salting process itself enables the pot to absorb the taste of the blood. The salting process itself enables the pot to absorb some of the taste of the blood. And as a result, the next time that you put something hot in it, what's going to happen? It's going to extract the taste of the blood. And that blood will enter your, whatever you are putting into that plate or that bowl. So here, there was no medium of heat in the initial absorption. None whatsoever. All you did was take a piece of meat and put lots of salt on it. Under those circumstances, we assume that the pot or plate will absorb the taste of the blood, even in the absence of heat, simply the process of salting itself is such a powerful one that it helps transfer the taste of the blood into the walls of the pot. Into the walls of the pot. And as a result, with subsequent applications of some degree of heat, it will extract that taste and blood you are not permitted to eat. And I should qualify what type of blood you are not permitted to eat. When we kosher a piece of meat, as you well know, if you broil that meat over an open fire, you don't technically have to kosher the meat at all. You don't have to kosher it. And that's what a lot of people do when they're on salt-free diets. They just broil it. And what happens? Any blood that comes out just drips down into a pan or onto your barbecue and it gets burnt up and that's it. The remaining blood that remains in the meat itself is perfectly permissible. And there's a ton of blood left if you don't actually salt it. Because the halacha is dam shepiresh is asur. Any blood that has come out of its natural cavity, its natural place in the animal, that blood, once removed and then subsequently absorbed, is prohibited. But however, if you don't move it out of its initial place in the animal, that blood is perfectly permissible to be consumed. So when you broil a piece of meat, some of the blood drips out. It will never be reabsorbed into the meat itself because it's not sitting in that blood. And as a result, you don't have to kosher the meat. You don't have to salt it. However, if you take a piece of meat and cook it in a pot, what's going to happen is the taste, the blood will be purged and eventually get in, become part of the gravy, because if you cook it in a pot, it's got to have some water in it. And then continued application of the heat, it will be reabsorbed into the pieces of meat that are cooking in this pot. So once it purged, it's prohibited. Hence, when you are cooking, the only way to allow you to cook meat in a pot and be free of the possibility of eating dam, and it's a serious offense, eating blood, it's punishable by karet, death implemented by a kadosh baruch hu, whatever karet means. So under those circumstances, you have to kasher the blood. But kasher the meat. But once the malicha has taken place, that act of salting, the malicha, serves as a matir for the remaining piece, for the remaining blood. For example, I kashered meat the way you're supposed to kasher it. Can anybody remember how you're supposed to kasher a piece of meat? What do you have to do? Before you salt it, you have to soak it. You have to be madiach. You have to salt it a little. Soak it a little. Why? To make the meat soft and to have to enable the salt to penetrate. Then you spread salt over the entire surface. Not table salt, but kosher salt. That's what it is. That's where they got it from, of course. Kosher salt. Right? So under those circumstances, you will then see, if you ever saw it, you will see the blood coming out of the pores of the meat. Then, in order to make sure that the blood isn't reabsorbed, you have to wash it off again after you finish salting. It's supposed to sit in the salt for about an hour, according to most authorities. And then you wash it off. Now, however, when you take that piece of meat and cook it in water, in a pot, there will be some residue blood coming out again. But you don't have to worry about that blood. Because once you have done malicha, the act of malicha is matir, the other blood that comes out. I can't explain logically why that is the case. I can't explain why before you salt it, if that blood comes out and is reabsorbed, you're not allowed to eat it. But after you salt it, I know that you've managed to extract a lot of the blood, but you certainly have not managed to extract all of the blood. And yet, that subsequent purging of blood due to the application of heat on the pot is going to purge additional blood. But we don't care about that blood. That blood is mutar, because in the yeshivish language, in the lingo, in the Beis Medrash, the malicha is matir, the blood. Matir. It permits it, and therefore there is nothing to be concerned about.
What does it mean, taking it from its natural cavity?
Means if it didn't come out. If it's still in the meat. There is blood in the meat. Every piece of meat that you...
Right.
There's blood in it. Well, if it doesn't come out, that blood, you're,
or with salt,
correct, you're allowed to eat it.
Okay.
End of discussion, you're allowed to eat it. Yes?
You didn't mean, though, I don't think the word, when you said how you could broil it, was it a barbecue or broiling, because you're talking about the pan. Well, let's say you used, I'm just asking, like a pan that's the roasting pan. As long as it was dripping down, it could be baked. It's not the word broil that.
Yeah, but what are you asking me about babe?
I was just curious if that was a lingo that was specifically boiled by that.
No,
I mean it's dripping down into a pan. Yes, it can be on the bake side. Yes, yes. Doesn't have to be on the broil side. Right. Right. Yeah, so...
Wait, it doesn't make your oven not kosher, though?
No, well, that you have a little pan. That if it were to fall on the oven, it would be a problem.
Right.
It would.
It doesn't splatter.
Okay, that's why you have a little pan, you know. It's a little drop here and there. But you have a pan. It's coming into the pan. No problem. Fine. That. So now, our Gemara says, Sakin Shishachad Ba, Asur Lachtoch Ba, Asur Le'echol Ba Roseach. You cannot eat anything that's hot. Of course, the rule we started with at the very beginning tonight, if after you salted the meat in this pot, you put something cold in it, it's not a problem. Because what will the cold piece of meat or anything do with the pot? Nothing. It will not extract the taste of the blood. It will not extract the taste of the blood. And as a result, there is absolutely nothing to worry about. Now, this statement was cited in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, who quoted Shmuel. Ushmuel lita'ame. Shmuel agrees with something else that he said. I am delighted that he agreed with something that he said. It would be shocking if he agreed with something that Rav said, because he argued with him all the time. But here, he's quoting himself. What did Shmuel say? Shmuel said two things. We're going to focus tonight primarily on the second thing and then come back to the first. The Amar Shmuel, Maliach, salting, Harehu Kiroseach, as if it's boiling hot. Risicha means that something is boiling hot. Vekavush, Harehu Kimivushal. If something soaks for X number of hours, that is considered as if it had been cooked. Something which is kavush. So if I take a piece of meat, non-kosher meat, and I boil up, and I put some water, not boil, cold water, and it sits in this cold water, eventually the taste of the non-kosher meat will permeate my walls. Even though there was not 1 minute of heat applied to this piece of meat. As long as it sits, no salt, as long as it sits and marinates for X number of hours, well, you will see it as a machloikis whether you need 3 days or 24 hours. We'll see what the machloikis is and then we'll see what the halach is. Yeah.
Is there an assumption that when you say soaking, it's water? Is the liquid?
No, it can be anything.
Because brining, which would be in another kind of liquid, you know that it cooks it. I mean, it does activate.
Good. Some are going to say that it has to be in something like vinegar.
Right. Right.
Good. That's what some say. I'm giving you already, I'm giving you the end result. Well, first we'll see. We're going to see. But there is, so this is a second exception to the rule. No transfer of taste normally takes place without the medium of heat. Here, there will be no medium of heat. It's just that it is sitting and soaking in this pot for X number of days or number of hours, and that in itself generates the capacity that the item which is being soaked will radiate its taste into the walls. And therefore, if it's a non-kosher piece of meat, the next time I cook a kosher piece of meat and cook it, the tam will be extracted and will come into my kosher piece of meat. So Shmuel said two things. Maliach is like roseach, and kavush is like mevushal. Now, I want you to use your brains. Shmuel did not use the same analogy for both. He did not use the same description for both processes. He did not use it for both processes. He said that salting is like roseach, means hot. Yet kavush is considered like what? Cooked. So which of the two do you think is a more powerful means of conveying time? Cooking or just hot? What? So we have a debate. Good. I'm glad we have a debate, because everything is subject to debate. But here, you're going to lose.
Well, cooking's got to be hot
too. Ms. Glicksman, you're going to lose. What?
Does rotach mean boiling?
Yeah.
It might. It might not. It might, but boy, all I want to establish is that it has to be something else other than cooking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now, I thought it was the epitome of cooking.
Cooking is probably at a much higher temperature than risicha. What is the temperature of rotchin? Nobody did my little test at home? Nobody did it?
No.
Don't do your homework? I'm going to mark you down. No homework. I told you to try it.
You try not to cook
the most absolutely. Have a look. This is not to cook. This is just to see at what temperature your finger will burn when it's in the. So you get a thermometer. You start boiling the water. It's 110. Still not. I can put my finger in it. When it reaches whatever it reaches, as I told you, Rabbi Tendler said it's 117. So see if he's right. Okay, see if he's right. Maybe he's wrong. He's the big scientist that he is. Maybe he's wrong. I don't know. I never tried it, but you can try it.
The water heater should keep your water at 120. So, because I just actually looked this up this week for a different reason. So if you turn your hot water in your sink on the highest and you put your finger in it, it's not going to burn.
It's not going to burn.
No.
When it's hot? Yeah, usually mine, you get burned. When I turn on my sink, after a couple of seconds, it takes a couple of seconds to come.
It
burns.
Burn.
Yeah, you got a boiler; it's not working. So yes. What? Kavush means marinating, soaking. Kavush. So the mere fact that that Shmuel himself uses two different expressions, salting is like resicha. Marinating is like cooking, so we are going to see eventually that there are levels of absorption. When it's cooking, it's the full maximum absorption possible. When it's just hot, but not necessarily cooking, there will be some absorption, but not complete, as if it had been cooked. Keep that in mind.
Doesn't cooking imply longer period also? Just like marinating?
So you could boil it for 1 minute.
Right.
And it might not be cooked.
That's correct.
Really consider cooking. Boiling isn't cooking.
That is correct. That is correct. It so in order to cook,
marinating takes a long time as well.
Correct. So does cooking.
Right.
And even in Hilchos Shabbos, if you have a flame on already, and you take a pot of water. Because you want hot tea. So you take your kettle, you ran out of water, and you just put it on the flame. And then he goes, oi, right away, oi, it's Shabbos. So what do? Just take it off. You haven't violated the law of cooking, because the water didn't cook. Cooking takes a while. Only, you're right, only when it's reached the stage of cooking is there maximum transfer of taste. Maximum transfer of taste. Good. Now let's begin to explore this particular halacha of kavush. This particular halacha of kavush. So go to page number 3 for a minute. Which is the Mordechai in Masechet Beitza, on the bottom of the page. The Mordechai was one of the 6 famous students of Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg, the Maharam Meirutenberg, who we have more tshuvot from than anybody in the history of Yahadut. We have 8,000 tshuvot recorded that have survived from the Maharam Meirutenberg. I'm not sure about Rav Moshe, who might have more. I'm not sure. I don't know if he has 8,000 either, but even if he did, I'm talking about at least from the period of Rishonim and early Achroinim, the Maharam Meirutenberg was always the number one measure. And as I've told you, the old-time professor of Jewish history at YU, Dr. Agus, always used him as the model of the greatest scholar amongst the Rishonim. His litmus test was, how many questions were asked of you? That means you were a genius. If somebody only asked 20 questions, nobody thought you were too bright. That's why he used to belittle the Rambam. Because the Rambam has only one small little book with 242 questions. So that's why he said, while our ancestors were studying Torah, his ancestors were swinging from trees. That's what he said about it. It's all Sparta Jews.
He's talking about Rambams?
Yes, yes. He said he was a third-rate scholar. But he was a great lecturer. You should obviously, in the Olam Emes, you'll be able to take his class. He was a spectacular teacher. Says the Mordechai, he was one of 6 students of the Maharam Meirutenberg, who spent a good part of his life in jail. And that's why he had a lot of time to answer questions. People came to his window. He had a little window. They dropped in the question, and he wrote up the answers. He was there for who knows how many years. He had nothing to do all day. So he wrote them up. You need time to write. Says the Mordechai, Afilu kavush va'afilu shaluk. Whatever this halacha in Masechet Beitza is talking about Eruv Tavshilin. So we all know about an Eruv Tavshilin, and we happen to paskin that an Eruv Tavshilin must be made with one cooked item and one baked item. That's the way we make an Eruv Tavshilin. And the purpose of the Eruv Tavshilin is to demonstrate that my cooking for Shabbat has already begun on Erev Yom Tov. So everything that I cook on Yom Tov is just an addition, not an initial preparation. And that's what the Chachamim said we will demand in order to remove the Isur Dirabanan of cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos. For cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos. If you cook on Yom Tov for a weekday, you violate an Isur D'Oraita. You're only allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Yom Tov. But if you cook on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov, you violate it, you get lashes, according to one opinion. However, from Yom Tov to Shabbos is only Asur Midurabanan. In order to protect you from cooking for during the week. Because if you're cooking for the next day, even though it happens to be Shabbos, in your mind you're saying, I'm cooking for the next day. What's the difference between the next day if it's Shabbos or the next day if it's Sunday? So therefore, the Chachamim made their rule. In order to remove the Issa D'Rabbani in the Erev Tavshilin. So a cooked item means exactly what the words mean. Cooked. Says the Mordechai. No, it doesn't have to be cooked. It can be kavush. It can be marinated. we'll see in what and for how long, in order for it to qualify as one of your items, as your cooked item for an Eruv Tavshiva. Afilu shaluk. Shaluk means that it's overcooked. Overcooked. And certain vegetables you cook. Rhubarb, that's what I was told, has to be overcooked. In order to make borscht, it's got, that's what somebody told me. I have no idea. Now, bepere kol habasar, Omar Shmuel, kavush harehu kemevushal, that marinating is exactly like cooking. Ubekama mikomot, and in many places, piresh Rashi bechometz. Rashi said, under what circumstances is marinating considered like cooking? If it's done in vinegar. Avol below chometz, page number 4, avol below chometz, eino kimevushal. Eino kimevushal. It is not halachically considered like mevushal. You need some type of an agent to do something in order to treat it, and therefore Rashi says vinegar. Many say that Rashi didn't only mean vinegar, he meant something a little sharper than plain water. However, the Mordechai says, V'i efshar lomar kein. You can't claim, Rashi can't be right. Why not? Disnan, the perikama de Shavuos, we learned in the first parak of Shavuos, vered yashan, shikovsho, bishemen chadash, chayav bibiur. Chayav bibiur. Biur is a concept where you have to get rid of something, depending on what you're talking about. So we have biur in relationship to ma'asrot. You're supposed to be mafrish all of the tithes that you're called upon to separate in their proper time. Ma'asarishon, where you give 10% of your tithes to a levi, has to be done the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. And it's given to a levi. Ma'aser sheni is 10% of your produce and your crops, which you now take and you eat it in Yerushalayim with your family. You don't give it to anybody. On the third and the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, you substitute ma'aser oni for ma'aser sheni. You don't take your produce to Yerushalayim, you just give 10% to the poor. If 3 years of the Shemitah cycle have lapsed, and you have not yet, what? Done what you're supposed to do, so you have to what? You have to be mivaer. You've got to get rid of it now, at the end of the third year. It's a pasuk in Parashat Ki Tavo. Now, here, we were talking about a vered. Mazeh vered? A rose. Now, we don't eat roses. However, apparently at that time, if it was marinated in something, it became edible and would be subject to the laws of biur. Regular flowers, you don't have to be mafresh trumas and masros, and they're not subject to the laws of biur. Right? If you're a florist, you don't have to worry about that. But here you convert it into an ochel. How did you convert it into an edible? By soaking it in what? Oil. Alma, below chometz, who no tain tam kimavushal. Apparently, even without vinegar, it will now be considered cooked. And this particular vered now is subject to the laws of biur. Good. So, Rashi, how do you say that it's only chometz? Here the illustration was oil. That's point number one. Point number two, Venera the kavush mikre sheshaha gimel yamim bedavar lach V'oz heve kimavusha. 24 hours is not sufficient. It must soak in this, whatever it is, for 24 hours. In any liquid. Any liquid. For 72 hours. 3 days. 72 hours. Then, under those circumstances, it happens upolet ta'am v'kolet ta'am. It can absorb taste, and what else? Purge taste. Exactly. Fine. How do I know this? K'damrinon b'maseches Avodah Zarah, as we write in Tractate Avodah Zarah. Kankanim shel ovdei kochavim. If you have jars usually held to store wine, mimalom gimul yamim, you fill them up, what, for 3 days? Umi'aran me'eit le'eit, ukibolo kach polto. Ma polto gimul yamim, af bolo gimul yamim. This is the basis of mistakenly, according to many, applying this business for Pesach, that you can take glass and soak it for 3 days and change the water every 24 hours. And you can suddenly kasher the glasses. Its root is only by Yayin Nesech and Stam Yenam. Don't forget, the idolaters never, ever, ever cooked their wine before they poured it in pagan ritual. Never. That's why if you go into any restaurant and a Gentile is handling it, what do you have to make sure? That it's mevusha. Because then it's not subject to the prohibition of stam yenam or bishul or yayin nesach. Now, these... a lot of the wines which they used, were sitting in the canister for 3 days. And it would sit for 3 days, and then they would use it for the idolatrous purposes. So, if I now purchase such a vessel from a Gentile, how would I kasher it? How do I kasher? I can't use something that is absorbed tam of Yayin Nesach. Yayin Nesach is not only Asur Bishtiyah, it's Asur Bahana'ah. It's Asur Bahana'ah. Can't derive any benefit from it. You have to throw it, you have to get rid of it. So now, if I use this utensil which had wine in it for 3 days, how do I kosher it? So the Mordechai says, the exact same way that it absorbs is the way you purge. It sits for 3 days in this canister. Hence, what do you have to do? Fill it up with clean water. And what? Let it sit for 3 days. And change the water to make sure that if there is any residue, it's already been spilled out. Fine. Kibolo kachpolto. That, ladies, is the most important halacha in Shulchan Aruch about issues of kashering. The most important. Kibol o kach polto. The way it absorbs is the way it was purged. Therefore, when you read your Pesach guides, many of them will tell you that the only way to kasher your oven or whatever it is to what? Libun. Blowtorch it. Blowtorch it. In Amule Gitzaten, people used to do that. They used to blowtorch an oven. Today, thank God you have self-cleaning mode. And the self-clean mode is the most effective libun possible. It gets up to 1,000 degrees and it's unbelievably effective. But not everybody has a self-cleaning cycle. If you don't have a self-cleaning cycle, so the Rav always said, all you need is kibolo kachpolto. So you put the oven on the highest possible temperature, just in case you decided to broil something that was chametz on 500. So you put it on 500 for X number of hours. The number of hours that was it sat for this one thing that you cooked chametz is the number of hours that you require in order to what? Purge it. And that's it. Kibol o kachpolto. Kibol o kachpolto. And that's applied all across the board for everything. The way it absorbs is the way it purges. And that's a very important rule. But the point of the Mordechai that I wanted to show you about this is that according to the Mordechai, the equivalent of marinating to bishul requires 3 days. That it marinate at least for 3 days in order to be considered mivushal. In order to be considered mivushal. Not everybody agrees this with this. Go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines from the top. 4th word into the line. Omnam Rabbeinu Meir Piresh B'Shem Rabbeinu Yitzchak B'Rab Avraham De B'Shriyas Yom V'Layla Choshiv Kavush Kimavushal. That all you need is to marinate it for how long? One day. 24 hours. That's what Rabbi Meir said. Rabbeinu Meir. And I'm a little surprised here that the Mordechai himself, who was a student of Rabbeinu Meir, the Maram, is not following his own Rebbe. Doesn't have to, but he usually does. He said you need 3 days, but he's quoting his Rebbe, who quoted somebody else, who said that it suffices with 1 day in order to consider it as if it is cooked, as if it's cooked. There is only one exception to the rule that we do not apply the rule of marinating equals cooking. And that's by basar b'chalav. So if I take a piece of meat and soak it in cold milk for 24 or 98 hours, makes no difference, you will not create basar b'chalav. Tell me why, ladies and ladies. You know why. What? What is that?
Because there are two things that are not
coming. That's a good stab. That's a good application of it. That is. It's a really good one. But you don't have to go be so sophisticated this time. But we're learning that marinating is the equivalent of cooking. Because the Torah itself says Motivashel. Not once, not twice, 3 times. So all commentaries state if the Torah went out of its way to state 3 times no cooking, no cooking, no cooking, it means real cooking. Not marinating for 24 hours or 72 hours. You have to cook it in order to create basar b'chalav. Now your svara might be applied. Why do we have such a high standard? Why can't just marinate? Maybe because of what you said. They were both permissible. When you're dealing with something non-kosher, we require less of a standard because the Isser is already present. But in order to create the Isser of Basar B'Chalav, you need a real act of cooking. It's the only exception to the rule. Yes?
They have a machlokas between 3 days or 1 day. What are they basing it on? The condition of the meat at the end of 3 days or 1 day?
No. What they considered the time that it will be necessary to actually transfer the taste, as if it had been cooked. That's what they're arguing about. They're acting practically. Now, I could have suggested just call in good old beefsteak and ask him after 24 hours, do you notice anything? What does this thing taste like? He says it tastes like a piece of meat. He doesn't notice the marinated vinegar or anything. If it only works after 72 hours, maybe it's somewhere in between. Maybe it's 48 hours. I've never seen that anybody would say, you know what? In order to resolve that machloikis, just call up Beefsteak Charlie and ask him to taste it. I've never seen that. I don't know why, but we haven't seen it. That's what the Mordechai says. Two things. He quotes Rashi, who says that it has to be vinegar. He disagrees with that. And he quotes the opinion, what he considers the acceptable opinion, that the marinating has to last for 3 days, although he acknowledges that his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Meir, says that 24 hours is sufficient. 24 hours is sufficient. Yeah. Go now for a second to page number 6. No, I don't need page 6. We already covered that. Go to page number 7. Here is another application of the principle of marinating is like cooking. Another application, nothing to do with kashrut, nothing to do with Eruv Tavshilin. This Gemara in Masechet Sukkah is describing what might be a disqualified type of an etrog. An etrog that is disqualified. And there are lots of types of disqualification. Lots of. So, for example, in line 1, it's talking about nistak or nikev in word number 5 and 6. If it has a hole, nekev is a hole. If there is a hole in the esrog, or a split, nistak is a split in it. That's no good. No good. However, I want you to look at line number 5, second word, shkavush. If I happen to have taken an esrog and simply soaked it in water for 24 hours, it's disqualified as an etrog. Why? Why is it disqualified as an etrog? Because fruit in the Torah's world is raw fruit, not cooked fruit. And in fact, many times when you cook a fruit, it forfeits its bracha of borei pri ha'etz. For example, what bracha do you make on applesauce? Okay, you have to be able to nikar hapri. You have to recognize the fruit, and not a little thing. It's got to be a decent size. But if it's regular matz applesauce, you make a shahakol, even though we know for a fact it's made out of apples, because once it's been cooked and processed, it forfeits its shem pri. That's one of the essential differences between borei pri ha'etz and borei pri adama. Borei pri adama does not require that tsurat hapri. Anytime you take a vegetable and cook it, the soup is borei pri adama. Even though you don't see, if you have, a pureed, if you make that, butternut squash or something like that, you don't see any butternuts in the soup. No butternuts. And you have to make a borei pri adama on it. Yeah?
What about something like tomato juice?
Tomato juice? Yeah, borei pri adama on it. Yeah, 100%. It's made out of tomatoes. Yes.
So there's a lower standard.
Lower standard for adama than there is for eights. All fruit juices, apple juice, peach juice, all of that, is borei pri shahakol nivivaro. Every one of them. Every one of them. So here, since in the cooking process it forfeits its designation as a pre, it's not qualified to be pre-Eitz Hadar. Pre-Eitz Hadar. Certainly if you cook it, but the Gemara here is applying it not only to cooking it, but also to marinating it, it forfeits its halachic status of a pre. Halachic status of a pre. I have no idea why. No idea why. What? Yeah, why did you be soaking in Esrei? To make it what? But that's after Yontif. In order to be mekayim the mitzvah, I don't think you'll do it before. Yes, there is esrog liqueur. But who cares? Okay, that's possible. Possible. They thought it was there were the bugs on it or something. So you wanted to marinate it to get the bugs out. Okay. Okay. Page 8, a Mishnah in Masechet Psachim, talking about maror, the types of vegetables that are acceptable for maror. So the Mishnah writes, "Ve'elu yirakot she'adam yotzei bahen yedei chovato bePesach." Here are the vegetables with you can use in Pesach: chazeret, lettuce, tamcha. What's that? It's an escarole. Charchavina, horseradish. Ulshin is something else, then check it. Ubim maror. So that's a machloikis, whether maror represents a type of vegetable, or it means anything that's what? That's bitter. Fine. Now, the order of the Mishnah is also important. Every Rishon points that out. Everybody thinks you're going to be mekayim the mitzvah in a greater fashion with horseradish, and it's not true. The sequence of the Mishnah is ranking them. Romaine lettuce is number one on the hit parade. I don't understand why either. Because its root is supposedly bitter, but you can't argue with the Mishnah.
And before we bred it for our palates, it was much more bitter.
Okay. Rav Aaron Cutler used to use regular lettuce. Iceberg lettuce. Didn't even use romaine lettuce.
Really?
Yes, that's what I was told. Yeah. So, yeah, I know. You know, my mother-in-law, she should live and be well, of course, doesn't believe me when I tell her that. You have to eat the romaine lettuce, of course. Of course. You have to eat the horseradish. And all of my kids got hooked into that. So they go crazy at the Seder. I sit there with the romaine lettuce and that's it. Yotzin bahen bein lachin bein yevashin. They can be moist or completely dried out. It's for, okay. Avolo kvushin. V'lo shulakin, v'lo mivushalin. No marinating, no overcooking, and no regular cooking. Now here marinating, good, but how long does it have to be? It's got to be either 3 days or 24. Nobody soaks their lettuce. Of course you're supposed to wash them out, no doubt. You don't have to say, you have to wash them off. That's all. Whatever you can't see can't be prohibited. And that's it. Just make sure there are no bugs on it.
You know, everybody holds
the tape.
So you don't have to look at it with a loop, that as if you're checking a diamond to see if there's any imperfection. They use the naked eye, and that's it. And see if it has any bugs on it. That's what the Chavetz Chaim always said. If you can't see it, it ain't there. So you can trust the Chavetz Chaim. Of course, his grandchildren didn't think his cup was big enough for Kiddush. Didn't have enough of a shear. The Tzadik Hador, the Chavetz Chaim. Good, so that's another application in terms of defining the eligibility of Maror if it's good. Page 9. Here it's talking about Bishul Akum, a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch, where you are not permitted to eat anything that has been prepared, cooked by a Gentile. And and here the tour will make a startling statement, and it has enormous practical ramifications. Says the tour, shlakot, vegetables that have been cooked, shebishlum ovdei kachavim, asurin, you are not permitted to eat them. Loshna im bishlam ovdei kachavim beveso, it makes no difference whether or not, what? He cooked it in his house, or bishlam bebeis Yisrael, or he cooked it in a Jewish, in your house. If the Gentile cooks it, it's asur ba'achila. The harav Rabbi Avraham, hayamatiram im bishlam ovdei kachavim beveito shel Yisrael. If the Gentile cooked it in your house, such as a housekeeper or, you know, somebody like that, he said there is never a problem of Bishul Akum under those circumstances. Why? There are two possible reasons why we should not eat Bishul Akum. And I'm talking about, you know for a fact that the product that he's cooking is kosher, the utensils he used were kosher, but the mere fact that he cooked it, you shouldn't eat it. Two reasons. One is chatnut, social interaction. Every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Sam knows very well that food is the most oft-used medium to encourage social interaction. Let's go out for drinks, let's have a little bite together, and then social interaction leads to a little more active social interaction, and then you're going to marry one of them. That's what the halach is worried about. And two, another reason why Bishul Akum is asur, v'lo mishum shema ya'achilenu dvarim tameim. Because if you're going to allow him to cook something in his house, you have no control over what he puts in the ingredients. So the Rabbi Avraham said, and he might be the Rambam's son, Rabbi Avraham ben Elshel Rambam, that might be him. Rabbeinu Avraham says that if it's done in your house, there's nothing to worry about that you're looking up to strike up a social interaction relation in your own house. Everybody in your house is going to make sure that that doesn't happen. And there's nothing to be concerned that he's going to serve you something that is prohibited, because all the ingredients are your ingredients. However, v'rabbeinu tam cholek alav v'chein nohagin. The Rabbeinu Tam said, this is prohibited, even if it's in your house, and such is the minhag. And I've given many a share on this particular topic. As long as it fits all of the criteria, there are several criteria. One, yes, it has to be cooked by a Gentile. Two, it has to be something which is oleh al shulchan milachim, something that is worthy of being served to a distinguished guest. And it has to be cooked. It's called bishul akum. But something that is served raw is not subject to bishul akum. That's why you're allowed to have a coffee any place in the world. Because water is often drunk plain without cooking. So if you decide to cook something that is eaten or drunk raw, the prohibition of bishul akum does not apply. So most people, when they buy an apple, they eat it. If the Gentile made applesauce, you're allowed to eat it as well. Because the product is typically eaten raw. But if you have a product that is typically eaten only cooked, then even if you choose to eat it raw, you're not allowed to do it. It's because it's a gzeira. That's what the Rabbanan said. So all of these items, once that happens, it's prohibited. So I'll give you an illustration. So when you're cooking noodles and cheese, which kids eat 18 times a week, you're not serving noodles and cheese to me. That's for sure. You're not.
And therefore,
it's not subject to bishul akum. But
your housekeeper can cook that for your kids.
That is correct. Without you turning on the flame.
Really? Not, and there's no reason for that to be zero.
None. Because that's not the way Bishul Akum was done. For what? For chasnus purposes. Mm-hmm. When was it done to strike up a relationship? When they served you something decent.
I'm told you can't drink Starbucks if they sell sandwiches.
No, that's something else. That's a different issue. No. That's if they serve it to you in their cup, then, and they wash it together with their dishes, that they, but if it's served in a paper cup, a coffee is not a problem. Not a problem.
Wait a second. Now, if they're preparing, let's say,
if they're preparing dinner for you,
to go with your meat, so the vegetables are fine because...
No, I'm not saying that. If you put on your plate a piece of chicken, a baked potato, and some vegetables, that's something that you would serve to everybody. That's something that you would serve. And that would be prohibited. Unless Yad Yisrael Be'emtza, which is only the Ramah's Kul. We're going to see it. The Mechaber, that's one of the few places where Karo is stricter than the Ashkenaz. He doesn't rely on that. That you just turn on the pilot light and that's it. Or turn on the oven and that's it. Karo says it has to be cooked by the Jew. But we Ashkenazim say, as long as an Ashkenaz person is involved in any part of the cooking process, the simplest thing is just to turn on the oven. That's all you need. That's what you need. Yes.
Is there an issue if you're not the person, it's not your housekeepers, whatever, but let's say you know somebody who doesn't take this upon them. I'm just saying their housekeeper cooks them and you're eating by them.
It's a problem. Not only is it a problem for the food, the Ramah writes, you have to kasher all of the dishes. If somebody, a Gentile, cooked in your kosher pot, kosher meat, it has to be kashered. You have to kasher, fill up a pot, don't use it 24 hours. That's how much it's considered a davar ha'asur. That's how much it's considered a davar ha'asur. It's a problem. It is a problem. It is a problem. Yeah.
What about like, health aids
it's an issue. It's an issue. I'm not going to say you can't have an aid for somebody who has to have some help. Obviously, that's a sakana not to be to have the help evolve. And you have to be realistic. You just it's not an Issa d'Oraisa. It's an Issa d'Rabbanan. And sometimes Issure d'Rabbanan are waived with Sorech Cholin. Often. And that's what we probably will say, that if you have an elderly parent and you have a live-in aid, which many do require, many of them require it and fight it off all the time, but they require it. That happens more all too often. So what can you do? The lady's cooking, right? What was that?
Noodles.
Just eat noodles and cheese all day, yeah. Okay.
How do you trust them not to trafe up your kitchen, even if they're just making noodles and cheese? You're not home, and they're just home in your house. Why do you trust them not
you
to...
You can watch them.
It's a good question. How do you know that they won't?
They put in the inflation pad, they said, oops, and they watched them, and I was going to know the difference. Why would they not do
so, okay, they wouldn't... I don't think...
It's in their best interest to do that, and not why to would make it, a mistake.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be in their best interest to do it deliberately.
No, okay,
what you don't know, can a shotten.
You're a religious person, maybe.
That's all.
Yeah,
that is also true. But at least by Nirul, you don't have the issue of Bishul Akum. That you don't have that problem. Just about Kashrut. If you have somebody who's not observant, but he's Jewish, that's not Bishul Akum. It's only by a Gentile. Only by a Gentile. So, now the question is, if you marinate, if the Gentile marinates something. Mm-hmm. Later on, the Torah will say, if he marinates something, what happens? It's considered Bishul Akum. It's considered, you're not allowed to eat it. If the person marinates something for 24 hours, you're not allowed to eat it because it's considered the Torah. It's called Bishul Akum. So this halacha of Mivushal, which we study tonight, has wide applications well above and beyond Yoredeya of the kashrut issues of cooking something, marinating something that's not kosher or things like that. It has applications that we saw to Eruv Tavshilin, to Esrog, to Maror, and here to the Issa Derabanan of Bishul Akum.
Can I bring up something just that applies to this that isn't like this book?
Sure.
That in Israel now, I just saw something. Yes. Did you see that?
No, you mentioned
that. Well, no, you, right. But that now there's a certain, I forgot what certificate people use now, that they were married, when they were married by the Rabbanut or something. Anyway, when they hire someone to work in a kosher restaurant, they take their information and they check. The Rabbanut won't give them a certificate of kashrut if the person isn't registered, like, you know, for sure that they're... That's the, in other words, that they're not true Jews, like someone from Russia or something like that.
Oh, so they want to use that for verification that they're Jewish,
right?
So that's that would be a good thing. I'm just saying that's an accurate proof, because if the rabbinate permits you to get married, it means you've already had the documentation to prove that you're Jewish.
Not allowing them to work, like here they want to work in the restaurant. They're saying and they won't.
They can't even work in the restaurant?
That's what I'm saying.
To do what? In the kitchen?
Or even
if there's a frum guy working there? Yeah. Who's the mashkiah?
That's what I just heard. It was from Seth Garber.
That's strange. That's wrong.
But it's what the rabbi is trying to do now.
Wow.
It's two classes.
Wow.
It's like two classes of Jews.
Even serving. Why?
That's what the article said.
That's crazy.
Yes.
But then they don't get a job, some people, and they're not even being told exactly why they're not being getting the job.
I'm sure somebody, hopefully somebody will get it in the Supreme Court, will finally do something they're supposed to do and overrule it. Yes. No, it does not. If it's already been cooked, it does not apply to reheating. That is correct. It does not apply to something that's already been cooked. That is correct. All right, we'll stop here, Rabotai. Remember, there will be no share next week. No share next week.